So what I'd like to tell you is briefly what I think is causing aging, why that's related to all the degenerative diseases of aging, including cancer, and then how to prevent cancer, and why the world is full of carcinogens as defined by high-dose tests in rodents, and why that doesn't matter very much, and why the government is spending all its money in the wrong places. So if you look at cancer versus age of the animal, cancer goes up with about the fourth power of age. So mice look like this, rats live a little longer, look like that, monkeys' date isn't great, look something like that, and people look like that. So all animals get cancer with this power of age, and the mice, the rats, the monkeys are on ordinary lab chow, which is a much better diet than people are getting, actually. And every year, we live longer, so every year there's more cancer. Whoop, what happened to the slides?
Did someone unplug the machine?
Did someone trip over that, or did the bulb burn out? If someone could send a...
Sometimes there's a bulb inside, a second bulb inside.
There usually is. Yeah. This is a test, Bruce.
Okay.
And people think that there's not a vast left-wing conspiracy against that. Okay.
So some people think we're going to eliminate cancer, that we'll stop smoking and eat good diets and that curve will flatten out. And I don't think that's in the cards, because what this says is a lot of cancer's built in. It's a part of aging. And doesn't mean that smoking doesn't cause cancer or bad diets, but that when we all live perfectly, there's still going to be cancer because it's built in. What's causing aging is also causing the degenerative disease of aging. And there is a group in the United States that has half the cancer mortality rate of the rest of us. They're doing everything right. And I was in a group of epidemiologists in Los Angeles, and Malcolm Pike was explaining the Seventh-day Adventists, the religion tells them all the right things. They don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't like caffeine, they're mostly vegetarian, so they're not supposed to eat much meat, and they go to church every week, and someone asked him, and have half the cancer mortality and live 2 or 3 years longer. Someone asked Pike, what do they die of? And he said, boredom. So we know... We know how to prevent cancer. You live the way the Seventh-day Adventists do. And the important things are smoking and diet, which I'll talk about if we ever get the slides back. So now then, what's causing aging? Well, it's related to metabolic rate. And a good, when you the people and the theorists in aging don't think that the animal dies for the benefit of the tribe, that aging is somehow built into us. That they don't believe in altruism, just the way economists don't believe in altruism. They think it's all trade-offs, and what nature is selecting for is for you to spread your genes, and you keep your body going enough to do that. In the old days, people were dying of starvation or eaten by predators or dying of infection. So a 40-year-old was an old person for most of human history, and long life where you get cancer and heart disease, those are disease of old age and didn't come into the equation and trade-offs. Anyway, more and more it looks like aging has to do with oxidation. In generating energy, what you're doing is you're burning fat or carbohydrate, which means pulling electrons off them. You add the electrons to oxygen, you add 4 electrons to oxygen, you're home safe to water. And all that's done in little power plants in the cell called mitochondria. And what we've been showing is that by the time a rat is old, the mitochondria are really in trouble. They're pouring out oxidants, and the membrane potential, they're little rechargeable batteries, basically. The membrane potential is down, and other things are wrong with them. And then you just can't, as you get old, you just can't generate the energy. But once you understand the mechanism, there are hundreds of ways to intervene. And one of my students right now is turning old rats into young rats with a little exaggeration. but not too much, because he's gotten the mitochondria to look like young mitochondria, and these old rats get up and do the Macarena. Anyway, so so I'm convinced that as science gets its hand on aging, there's going to be tremendous progress. Already, mortality rates are falling by 1% a year, and life expectancy is going to get longer faster than anybody thinks, but of course, Social Security is going to go broke faster than anybody thinks. So anyway, I think we all have that to look forward to, and that's also going to affect cancer, because your old mitochondria are just pouring out all these oxidants, and the oxidants are the same thing you get from radiation. Radiation is a mutagen because it splits water, makes these nasty oxidants. Well, the same thing is happening in living. It's not the whole story, but I think there's going to be a lot of progress. Now I'd like to turn to cancer. So cancer is one of the degenerative diseases. This just shows adding electrons to oxygen. The defense systems aren't keeping up. This shows oxidized protein going up with age in rats and in people. You look at oxidized DNA, that's going up with age in rats and people. You look at lipids oxidized, you make all sorts of mutagens, that's going up with age in rats and people. So our defense systems are never 100% perfect, because it doesn't pay, resources are limiting, and it doesn't pay nature to be 100% perfect. And it's slowly, you're accumulating all these junk in the cells, and then the mitochondria are putting out more oxygen. So, now what about cancer? Well, as I said, there's more total cancer because we're living so long. But even if you age correct, which epidemiologists do, this is men and this is women, and this is from the American Cancer Society, and it's cancer in the U.S. from 1930 to the present. And this line going up is the really striking line, and that's lung cancer. 90% of that's due to smoking. So smoking completely dominates the cancer statistics. This is all age corrected. And so smoking is causing a quarter of the heart disease, a third of the cancer, over 400,000 premature deaths a year in the U.S., a third of the fires. It's about 8 years off your life if you're a two-pack-a-day smoker. So there are not too many other things you can do that do you in, like smoking. And if you're correct for lung cancer, correct for the effects of smoking, cancer rates are coming down. They've come down 16% since 1950. So everybody talks about a cancer epidemic due to the chemical companies, but it's not true. There is a cancer epidemic, partly because we're living so long, and partly because we've been smoking. Now, as you can see, it's starting to level off, and now there's starting to be a big class thing in smoking. Educated people, at least in California, just don't smoke anymore. Now, women, this is women. Women started smoking. Men started smoking around the turn of the century, and then 25, 30 years later, the heart disease and cancer came in. Women started smoking about the time of the Second World War in a big way. As you can see, lung cancer has passed breast cancer, and now young women smoke as much as young men. So this curve is just going to go up and up. And so we know one way to prevent cancer and heart disease, stop smoking. But, and there's progress. It's leveling off, and it's down from about a third of the country was smoking or more, down to about a quarter of the country. So now, of the other major types of cancer, there's not a lot. Stomach cancer used to be the leading cancer in the U.S. It's been coming down since 1930, for 60 years. We've done something right. It's coming down in both men and women. Is it pesticides that have caused stomach cancer to come down? Epidemiologists are very careful. Two things can go together, it doesn't mean they're causal. There's an epidemiologist joke, Florida's a weird place. Everybody's born Hispanic and dies Jewish. So you really want to know it's plausible, right? So of the major cancers, breast cancer hasn't been changing an awful lot. Unless, here's breast cancer down here. Maybe creeping up a little bit. Now, breast cancer seems to be mainly due to hormones. The leading guys are Henderson and Pike in Los Angeles, and they explain most of what we know about breast cancer by estrogen levels. So if a woman has her first period early, she has a higher rate of breast cancer than in Victorian times when women were having their first period 15 or 16, So it has to do with cycles in the breast. Nuns have very high rates of breast cancer, and women who have children early and often have low rates of breast cancer. And then exercise lowers your estrogen level and lowers your rate of breast cancer, and obesity raises your estrogen levels and raises your level of breast cancer. Anyway, people are figuring a lot of this out. There may be a dietary component, but once you understand it, the ways to intervene, and Pike and Henderson have a pill that it's going to be a new birth control pill that's going to lower your breast cancer rate. Anyway, we'll see if they ever get it through FDA. But all this is improving, and I think in a decade we're going to really know how to prevent breast cancer. Now, the Japanese women have very low breast cancer rates. They eat a lot of soybeans, which have a weak estrogen and acts as an anti-estrogen. So maybe they're titrating down their estrogen levels. And that isn't proven yet, but there's a lot of interest in that. So there are going to be a lot of ways to intervene. And then prostate cancer is going up a bit. The best idea on that is it's too much fat in the diet and testosterone levels. And again, there may be a dietary component. Colon cancer looks like the high fat, it might be a risk factor. Antioxidants may protect. Folic acid protects. Vitamin E may protect. Anyway, it's some combination of diet and protective factors, and people are working on that. And all in all, we're doing pretty well. The two cancers that are definitely going up are melanoma, which is due to burns when you're young. So fair skin, there's no sunshine in England to speak of, and all these fair-skinned people went off to Australia, burnt themselves to a crisp, and they have the highest rate of melanoma in the world. But it mainly seems burns when you're young. So slowly, all these different types of cancer being sorted out, and I think there's progress. My passion is preventing cancer rather than just trying to cure it, because that's improving too, but it's hard to cure cancer once you have it. Anyway, now, one thing that all the epidemiologists, this is Vincent van Gogh. He painted all these sunflowers, but he also painted a skull smoking. I think he had the right idea. This says, if you want fiber, madame, I suggest you eat the menu. So all epidemiologists think that diet is just as important as smoking. It's at least a third of cancer. And that's where the gold is, I think, and that's where we can make a lot of progress, because people can, once you understand it, the ways to change your life. And I'd like to just briefly talk about that. The one thing that's becoming very clear is that fruits and vegetables protect you against cancer. Gladys Block, who's an epidemiologist at Berkeley, she used to be at the National Cancer Institute, every couple of years she reviews all the studies in the world on diet and cancer, and she reviewed 172 epidemiological studies. And the quarter of the population that eat the fewest fruits and vegetables have double the cancer rate of the quarter that eat the most fruits and vegetables for practically every type of cancer. Lung cancer, 24 out of 25 studies showed a protective effect. 2.2 is the difference between the low group and the high group. Oral cancer, larynx, esophagus, stomach. You go through all these different types of cancer, the quarter eating the fewest fruits and vegetables have double the cancer rate. Now, that raises several questions. The quarter eating the most fruits and vegetables, the U.S. is eating maybe four portions a day. We should be eating five portions of fruits and vegetables a day. The quarter eating the least, maybe one or two portions of fruits and vegetables. We're just talking about a few portions of fruits and vegetables make a huge difference in your cancer rate. So two questions. What's in fruits and vegetables? And then there's a funny thing. Lung cancer, you cut your rate in half if you eat your fruits and vegetables. But we know 90% of lung cancer is due to smoking. What's going on? Well, there's a big interaction between smoking and your diet. And I think the reason is when you smoke, you're breathing parts per thousand of nitrogen oxide. That's the same stuff that comes out of car exhaust. When you burn anything, nitrogen in the air reacts with oxygen. You get nitrogen oxides, which are powerful oxidants. And smoking is known to deplete all your antioxidants, your vitamin E and your vitamin C, which you need in your diet to protect you. If you don't get your vitamin C and E, it's like irradiating yourself. You get all your vitamin C from your fruits and vegetables. So there's some big interaction between smoking and diet. But there are 1,000 different mutagens probably in cigarette smoke, so it's not only the nitrogen oxides, but I think that's part of the story. Anyway, so what's in fruits and vegetables? Well, you get your vitamin C from your fruits and vegetables, and we did a lot of work showing human DNA gets damaged when you don't get enough vitamin C. And vitamin E, there's a ton of epidemiology coming out now that people who take vitamin E pills lower their heart disease rate, lower their colon cancer rate. So there's most of us are not getting enough vitamin E. So those are protect you then against DNA damage. And the thing that opened my eyes was the story on folic acid. Folic acid is becoming a hot vitamin now. The Latin word folia means leaf, foliage. And where do you get your folic acid? From spinach and things like that. And it's one of the vitamins. Okay, sorry. Okay. So if you don't get enough folic acid, you don't methylate your homocysteine to the amino acid methionine. Homocysteine accumulates, and that gives you heart disease. People think 10% of the heart disease in the U.S. are due to not getting enough folate. And if you don't have enough vitamin B12, which you get from meat, not from from veggies, that does the same thing. So a third of Americans have too high levels of homocysteine in the blood. And we worked on this part. Folic acid deficiency breaks your chromosomes, and we showed the reason why. One of my graduate students, because folic acid is also involved in methylating the RNA-based uracil to the DNA-based thymine, and we showed that there are 4 million uracils per human cell in the DNA, and they're not supposed to be any when you don't have enough folate, and every time you repair out a uracil, you're making a nick in the DNA, so you're making nicks all over your chromosome, and you get one across from another, you get a double-strand break, which is really hard to repair. So you're breaking your chromosomes when you don't have enough folate, which could account for the reason that colon cancer is much higher in people on low folate. And there are a dozen papers saying there are cognitive defects with low B12 or low folate, which do the same thing. And so I think you're doing it in your brain, too, though that's not generally accepted in the community, but I think once we have some animal models on it, people start to believe it. So anyway, there are all these things going on out there, and we're talking about a lot of people out there. When we looked up what level of folic acid intake is, we saw chromosome breaks out, which we're talking about 10% of the population and half of poor urban blacks in the United States. That was too small populations, my epidemiologist friends say they think that's an exaggeration. Maybe it's only a quarter of urban blacks. But blacks and Hispanics are eating this terrible diet, and they're giving themselves cancer, they're giving themselves heart disease, and I think they may be doing it in the brains as well. So these are just a few of the micronutrients that, the type is so small, that cause where deficiency causes DNA damage. Vitamin C, vitamin E, they're radiation mimics, folic acid, gives you cancer and heart disease and birth defects if you don't get enough. But you don't get enough iron, it's breaking your chromosome too. You don't get enough zinc, and we're talking about 20% of the population, you're in trouble. So each one of these is somewhere between 10 and 20% of the population, and they're not all the same people. So I think it's going to be half the country, and we need to get vitamins into the poor. But 20, 25% of the population are taking multivitamins, but it's the 25% eating the best diets, and it's the poor that need them. It costs a cent to make a multivitamin pill, and they sell it for a nickel. It's cheap. It doesn't cost anything, yet the government's putting all its money into EPA regulation and nothing into getting the poor to eat a better diet. So we're putting our priorities in the wrong places, and this isn't the whole story about diet, but it's going to be one important one. Now, what's causing cancer? Well, about a third of it's smoke from smoking, a third from unbalanced diet, we're eating too much fat, too few fruits and vegetables and other things. 20%, this is a mistake, is chronic infections, mostly in the third world. Every time you get an infection, your own white cells are pouring out hypochlorite, which is Clorox, they're pouring out nitrogen oxides, all these nasty mutagens. The environmental organization worry about chlorine, but every time you get a cold, you're chlorinating yourself because that's defending you against bacteria. You have a chronic infection, it leads to cancer, hepatitis B, and then schistosomiasis, lots of diseases that lead to chronic. Hormones, 20% or so, 2% to occupation, and pollution's all a red herring, but that's where we're putting all our money. We're not putting anything into anything else compared to pollution. So why did we go down this wrong road? Well, partly it was Rachel Carson. If it's synthetic, it's evil. If it's natural, it's fine. So she wrote a diatribe against DDT, and it was a sort of bizarre book, but she never mentioned that DDT was the most valuable chemical ever invented by man. DDT saved hundreds of millions of lives. It sprayed on a native hut, it killed malaria for years. So that book was so dishonest. Four people did an experiment about DDT. Rachel Carson mentioned the one that where maybe something might have happened and left out the three where they said nothing happened. She said robins are dying out. You look up Roger Torrey Peterson on robin sightings, they were exactly the same. So now DDT was the first modern pesticide, and it saved all these lives. Now it does bioconcentrate. Maybe it was killing off the pelicans and the eagles, so even that's a little iffy. But it was fine to phase it out, but we're in the fifth generation of pesticides after DDT. Now, animal cancer tests have been what have we tested? We've tested synthetic industrial chemicals, which are just a drop in the bucket of the chemicals you're getting into you. 0.1% of 0.01% of the chemicals you get into you are synthetic. Everything else is natural. So we did these huge doses of chemicals in rats, did them for the lifetime at the maximum tolerated dose, and half of them came out positive, but they were synthetic chemicals. They never ran the control. But if you test chemicals in broccoli or chemicals in a cup of coffee or chemicals in your plants, what you eat, half of those come out positive. So half of everything comes out positive, and there's a whole set of lots of papers coming out saying it's a high-dose artifact. Yet EPA tests a synthetic chemical and tries to protect you against a part per billion and doesn't worry about broccoli or cups of coffee. So this is all the chemicals in broccoli. All plant evolution is chemical warfare. Plants are making nastier chemicals to kill off insects, and they're all filled with toxic chemicals. Well, half of these tested come out positive. 64 have been tested, 35 come out positive. And these are the carcinogens, these are the non-carcinogens, the present in apple and apricot and turnip and rutabaga and everything in between. So you can't eat anything that doesn't have natural carcinogens, but EPA doesn't care. And if you look at a cup of coffee, there are 1,000 chemicals in a cup of coffee that you get from roasting the coffee. They've only tested a few of them, and these are carcinogens, these are not carcinogens. So far there are 10 milligrams of carcinogens in a cup of coffee. The more carcinogen in a cup of coffee than pesticide residues you get in a year. And we still have 1,000 chemicals left to test, but EPA drinks the coffee and tries to protect us against the part of it. So we put all these on a scale trying to compare them, and synthetic things just aren't in the league. It's not plausible that they're really contributors to a cancer in any significant way. So the economists hate all this because they say you want to have every government agency spend about the same money to save a life, and the highway department saves a life for $200,000, and EPA is saving a fake life for $50 million. It doesn't make sense. We save 150 times more lives for the dollar spent if you do a medical intervention than you do a toxin intervention, and the fake lives in the toxin intervention because they're all based on worst cases. So it's all crazy, but that's where EPA regulations cost $140 billion a year, and we spend $2 billion a year on all the cancer research in the country and practically nothing on getting the poor to eat a good diet, which would really make a difference. So to finish off, it wasn't so wonderful back in 1900 because horses put out 100 times more pollution per mile than cars, and they're much more, and they're much more dangerous than cars. Every year, life expectancy goes up. This is women, this is men, and it wasn't such a great world back in 1900. And it's going to continue to go up. And this says, relax, I've come for your toaster. And the point about that is if you have 1,000 hypothetical unimportant risks, they drive out major risks. If you ask the public what's causing their cancer, very few of them will say fruits and vegetables protect me against cancer or vitamins protect me against cancer. They'll mention pesticide risks. So you have to go after the big things, otherwise you're lost, and we're lost. And the very last slide, sorry, Fred, this says, do not enter, no right turn, no turn on red. And there we're going. So the government is flying off in the wrong direction, and they're not exactly flying a 747. Okay. Thank you.